394 yeses, 206 noes, 49 abstentions. The European Parliament gives a resounding yes to Christine Lagarde as the next president of the European Central Bank. Just one formality remains for the IMF chief and former French finance minister before she takes over on November the 1st. EU leaders must approve her eight-year appointment at a summit next month.
Stocks on Wall Street rose Tuesday as investors' worries over oil supply faded. Saudi Arabia's energy minister said crude production has been fully restored after the weekend attacks on its oil facility. The S&P 500 gained 0.25% as Federal Reserve policymakers met to decide about interest rates. Apache, Marathon Oil, and other energy companies that were among Monday's biggest gainers were Tuesday's biggest losers. Corning shares tumbled. The glassmaker producing Apple's iPhone screens lowered its display volume forecast for the current quarter.
AB InBev wants to have another go at spinning off its Asian arm. The world's biggest brewer is planning a Hong Kong share sale worth up to $6.6 billion. It would value the unit at between $45 and $50 billion. And if successful, it would be the world's second biggest flotation this year. Success isn't guaranteed, though. Back in July, AB InBev tried to raise almost $10 billion selling the same unit, but that IPO was soon pulled.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's September the 18th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. And another business day here getting underway on the program today. We're going to focus in on new research that shows hearing aid in people who are suffering hearing loss may forestall dementia. And we'll talk with one of the lead researchers and a health economist from the University of Michigan about this. A pretty big study that has some wide-ranging implications, especially in a society where dementia cases are growing by the day exponentially and could become epidemic levels before long as an aging population succumbs to either dementia or Alzheimer's disease. So that'll be first this morning. Elham Mahmoudi, health economist and researcher at the University of Michigan, will join us momentarily. A little bit later in the program, the latest report is out on lawsuit climate in the United States. The 2019 lawsuit climate survey is out by the U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform. And Harold Kim from that organization will join us at about 5:38 this morning. We'll find out where Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin rank in the latest survey and see what the climate says about businesses in court. Again, that's at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour right here on 720 WGN. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a week open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures are all off into the red this morning. In Europe, markets are generally in the green. In London, up by nearly a quarter of a percent. In Germany, up fractionally. And in France, up just a little bit as well. In Asia, mostly in the red this morning. The Nikkei ending the day down nearly a quarter of a percent. In Hong Kong, off by nearly a quarter of a percent. Markets in China ending the day higher by about a quarter of a percent. Oil in the United States is at $58.76 a barrel. Couple of stories as we begin this morning. United Auto Workers members who are on strike against General Motors are getting a big surprise when it comes to their health care while they're off the job. GM confirmed yesterday that union workers are now on COBRA, meaning the UAW strike fund will have to cover the cost until the strike ends. General Motors made the decision yesterday to end health care coverage for the striking workers. The UAW strike fund does have a balance of around $1 billion, but the health coverage switch could drain that very quickly. Contract talks are continuing between the automaker and the union. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission says it's likely that Walmart discriminated against women employees by paying them less and denying them promotions. In a series of memos that came out to light this week, the EEOC asked the retail giant to work toward a just resolution with the 178 women in the case, which could potentially mean a settlement and changes to the company's employment practices. A Walmart spokesperson says some of the allegations were more than 15 years old and not representative of the current culture at Walmart. The Federal Reserve expected to announce another interest rate cut today, and that's expected to trim credit costs for millions of Americans. The anticipated 0.25% cut in the interest rate banks charge one another for overnight loans could be the second in 2 months. Financial experts say the cut aimed at Wall Street will reduce borrowing costs on Main Street. The Fed's interest rate cut should result in lower interest rates on credit cards, home equity lines of credit, adjustable rate mortgages, and car loans. Let's begin this morning with some new research on hearing loss and the use of hearing aids. Hearing aids could cut older people's risk of dementia. So why aren't they covered by Medicare, covered more by insurance? Joining us this morning is Elham Mahmoudi, a health economist and researcher and assistant professor at the University of Michigan in the Department of Family Medicine. Elham, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you, because this is an issue that when we saw this story and saw this research, we wanted to get it on and bring it to people, because I think a lot of people will be able to relate to it. This research showing that a hearing aid could help maybe stave off dementia in older people. Talk to us a little bit about what you've studied and what you found.
Sure. So we know the prior research shows that prevalence of certain age-related conditions, most importantly, I think Alzheimer's disease and related dementia, are much higher among people with hearing loss. And it's not just hearing loss. We looked at hearing loss, but I have to say that among people with sensory impairment, vision as well. But this study was about people with hearing loss. So we knew that the prevalence is much higher, things like depression, anxiety, injuries related to fall, and some certain cardiometabolic conditions as well. So we wanted to see in this study, we used claims data to have access to a large sample size and be able to follow them longitudinally over a three-year period to see if use of hearing aids could have a modifiable factor. So this wasn't a causal study. So what we were after was, is there any association between hearing aids and basically reducing the risk of developing these conditions that we know are much higher among people with hearing loss? And what we found out was, it is. Using hearing aids basically reduces your risk of developing these conditions within a three-year time period. And it was substantial. It's clinically meaningful.
The numbers are, as you mentioned, substantial. 18% lower risk of being diagnosed with dementia, 11% lower risk of being injured in fall, that was 13%. Depression diagnosis, staving off that, 11%. So that those are double-digit numbers. How significant are those?
They are statistically significant and clinically meaningful. So this study is, it has a lot of limitations, of course, because we used claims data. More studies needed to confirm our findings, but it goes well with what we hear from other researchers working on this area. Hearing loss is something that's modifiable, and by modifying it, what we're saying basically is these age-related conditions or falls related to injuries are not inevitable signs of aging. We can do something to reduce the risk. And use of hearing aids is an intervention or treatment. It's a not invasive treatment approach that can modify the risk.
What is going on health-wise with this physically, that a hearing aid helps prevent some of these things? What's the physiological change that's happening?
There are two theories behind that. I'm a health economist. I'm not a physician. Some people argue that there's some structural in brain when there's a sensory impairment, and that causes higher prevalence of certain conditions among people with hearing loss. There's another angle to that, which is isolation and lack of social contact, and also sensory load that can be modifiable with hearing aids. So this is the angle that I'm approaching. What I'm saying is, I don't know much about the brain structure and the effect of hearing loss on brain structure, but what's obvious is, which I've seen in my own dad, when people cannot hear well, they become more isolated, and that has been linked with depression, anxiety, dementia, as well as how we link it with injurious falls is they, because of this sensory overload, because you can't hear well, it seems that you have lack of spatial awareness, so you can fall easily and injure yourself. So that is the link from my angle. It's probably both of these, and we are not saying if you use hearing aids, you basically, you're not going to have dementia. This is not it. There's no causal relation here. But it shows that it reduces your risk dramatically, substantially.
So why do more people not get hearing aids? What's going on? Is there an economic part of this? Is it an insurance issue?
For sure. It's a multidimensional factors. That's a very good point. Cost definitely is a huge issue. As you mentioned, it costs about $2,000 to $7,000. They're not cheap for sure. Medicare insurance for older adults is not covering no part of it, not hearing examination, not hearing care, not purchasing of hearing aids devices, and those insurance that do cover them, it's a partial coverage, and it's not substantial. So they are expensive. Besides that, the hearing care system in the United States is very complex. So you have to go to your family doctor first or primary doctor. They're not audiologists, so they refer you to an audiologist. Then you have to go purchase your hearing aid devices somewhere else, come back multiple times for fitting tests to make sure it fits properly and it works properly. So it's complex for older people, considering transportation and cost. They're all barriers. On top of that, there's some stigma attached to it. Some people don't want to wear it because it shows there are issues related to noise and everything. So it's a complex system.
What's the solution? I'm guessing it's probably going to be a multi-pronged solution to not only make this more affordable, but to get more people to wear hearing aids.
Yeah, I think to start with, we need an educational outreach. People and physicians both need to know about the health benefits associated with hearing aids. We need to have more investment in the industry to make them less expensive, more affordable, advocating for specifically for Medicare, which is more than 70% of our older population are covered by Medicare fee-for-service, and they're not covering it. Advocate for its coverage, showing that it has health benefits down the road. Longitudinally, it has health benefits, which can offset the cost associated with those devices and hearing care services. And make hearing care services easier. I give you an example. Costco has started offering hearing care services. It's a one-point, basically, shop. You go to Costco, they have audiologists over there, and they have hearing devices. You purchase them, you fit them at the same place. You probably have to come back second time for another sitting, but that's it. It's much simpler, but it's out of pocket, and it's expensive.
As we look to the future, there are all kinds of predictions about the rates of dementia as we get further into the future and more baby boomers and older people move into the retirement years. If we're looking at an epidemic of dementia, any little help to help kind of offset that is probably a good thing, right?
Absolutely. Alzheimer's disease and dementia is one of the most expensive and devastating age-related condition. Anything to reduce the risk worth the investment. So if we think that spending, let's say, an average $2,000 to $7,000 is too much, you have to look at the cost of Alzheimer's and dementia and the risks that developing that condition will bring along. Like these people can get institutionalized, it brings premature death, the caregiver issues. So this is something that if we can reduce the risk, we need to pay attention to it.
Yeah, it's because, again, it goes back to the cost-benefit analysis to Medicare, not paying for hearing aids. The cost to Medicare later on with dementia and other ailments is going to be much, much more. It makes sense to maybe invest a little of that now.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. I would like to do this study, actually. We looked at the cost comparing. This paper will come out soon. Cost differences, healthcare cost differences between these two groups. Within 3-year period, there was not much cost difference, but I'm sure if we look at these people over a 10-year period, because Alzheimer's disease and dementia is a gradual disease. It's something that will be developed. It will take decades for it to develop. The cost benefit, it's a cost-effective strategy to cover these things, but within a decade, at least this is how I hypothesize this, we can see substantial cost saving for the group that we reduce the risk of developing this condition.
Elham, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing this research with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Elham Mahmoudi, health economist and researcher, assistant professor at the University of Michigan in the Department of Family Medicine.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us. It is Wednesday here on The Opening Bell. Our focus now shifts to the latest report from the U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform. The 2019 Lawsuit Climate Survey, ranking the states, is out. It's a survey of the best and worst state legal systems conducted by the Harris Poll after questioning senior business executives about the fairness and reasonableness of the state court systems in their eyes. Let's bring in Harold Kim. He's the COO of the U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform to talk a little bit more about this morning. Harold, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning, Stephen. Thanks a lot for having me.
You're very welcome. It's nice to have you here as well. Talk to us a little bit about why you do this survey. We mentioned that it's a survey of senior business executives and what they think about state court systems. Why do you make this survey? Yeah. Why do you do this survey?
Well, we've been doing this survey since 2002, and we think it's really important for state policymakers, governors, and the local business community to know where their standing is with respect to their state liability climates, which includes the courts, the judges, the juries, the laws that are on the books. And it's a good barometer to get a sentiment from the business community because they are surveying over 1,300 in-house counsel and senior executives with fairly large companies that generate revenues in excess of $100 million annually. And so, you know, these are companies that drive the economy in various states, and a litigation system has an impact negatively and positively, as you might imagine, based upon how the particular state has their legal environment structured.
And so, in a nutshell, if a state is deemed to have a legal system that ties up businesses in court a lot, it's likely that company may not have a presence in that state.
Yeah, well, one of the results from this recent survey we did was that 89% of the respondents, and this is the highest percentage ever, said that a state's lawsuit environment is likely to impact a company decision about where to locate, where to do business, and basically where to create jobs.
So as we look at this report, I know you guys have done it state by state. There's a lot of different details on here. The overall theme, though, is what among the businesses that you surveyed, the business people you surveyed?
Well, I think that there's a significant concern about liability systems in states that go beyond what we would describe as operating in a rational, predictable manner. And because of the uncertainties that come with runaway jury verdicts, abusive class action litigation, it really becomes a burden for businesses because there's just no predictability or certainty. You know, when it comes to, let's say, a state legislature increases payroll taxes or other types of mandates, I mean, that at least is predictable. But when it comes to litigation, you just never know when you're going to be on the other side of a complaint that in many instances, especially in the state of Illinois, can be deemed as frivolous or abusive.
The survey shows, if you look at all of these scores, the average scores, that at least it appears to be improving in the eyes of some of these business executives.
Yeah, I think the overall raw scores have increased, and I think a result of legal reforms that have been enacted in states ever since, you know, early 2010. And so there is sort of an effort by states to address some of these issues. You've seen it throughout the Southeast, in places in the Northeast. I think state Supreme Courts are trying to do a better job in policing some of the mischief that's happening at the trial court level. So overall, the raw scores of these states have been moving up. But still, it is nowhere near where it should be, given the cost of the U.S. tort system writ large, which we have quantified, at least in 2016, to be well over $400 billion, which is a big chunk of change, as you might imagine.
Right, right. So I'm looking at the map, and we'll go through some of these here, but we're obviously interested in our state here and some neighboring states as well. But on the list of states, number one is Delaware. Number 50 is Illinois. Illinois is at the very bottom.
Yeah, you know, since we've been doing this survey in 2002, Illinois has definitely gotten its worst score this year. And there are probably a lot of reasons for it. And I'm happy to talk to you about why Delaware, which is consistently ranked number one, re-achieved that score this year.
Yeah, if you could tell us, what's different between Delaware and Illinois?
Well, so Delaware is a favorite jurisdiction for a lot of companies to incorporate. The court system there has a well-developed body of corporate law, and I think overall there is a fair degree of comfort in terms of the predictability and the certainty that the highest court in Delaware has established over the years. And it's pretty well known as a jurisdiction that has that type of predictability and certainty, which is really important for companies in terms of assessing where the risks are going to be, because, you know, any free enterprise venture is going to associate some modicum of risk, and when you're dealing with liability issues, having at least some certainty on that front is important. I think that's why Delaware has ranked consistently at number one throughout the years.
And so why would
in contrast, with Illinois, I think that you have a system that is problematic on a number of fronts. First and foremost, two of the specific jurisdictions, Cook County and Madison County, have been deemed as one of the worst specific jurisdictions in the country. And I think a lot of that is based on concerns about the impartiality of the judges. And there's some questions about the rulings that are made pre-trial or even during the trial of the case. In addition, there are some laws that have been passed by your legislature, like this Biometric Information Privacy Act, or BIPA, which has spawned a huge cottage industry of abusive class action litigation. It may be well-intentioned to protect the biometric features of individuals, but the outcomes are completely untethered to the original intent of the legislation. And you know, companies are not selling certain innovative products in the state of Illinois for fear of being sued. And citizens in the state of Illinois are not getting certain technological innovations because of the liability associated with that. And I'm happy to give you specific examples. But, you know, this is the kind of environment that created the concerns within the business community. And then the final point is the amount of asbestos litigation that is coming into Madison and St. Clair County. And under current statistics, about 92% of the plaintiffs who bring these asbestos cases aren't even residents of the state of Illinois. So it gives you a flavor in terms of how this is a favored destination for a lot of out-of-state plaintiff lawyers and out-of-state plaintiffs.
Wisconsin is number 13. Indiana is number 31. I am surprised to see Texas at number 38. Texas is, by a number of different measures, a place where a lot of business has been locating and people have been moving. Why do they have such a place at number 38?
Well, you know, Texas has historically been in the bottom 10, and they have really focused on litigation reforms, legal reforms over the past several years. The legislature has passed the laws, but I think some of the problems that you see is in certain jurisdictions is whether the judges are following those laws. And so you can have the best laws on the books, but there's a human element to this. And I think that there's some concern about certain pockets and areas of the state. There are also some appellate courts, I think, around Harris County. There are some significant potential concerns about whether the judges in the intermediate courts are actually doing appropriate judicial review of some of the problematic decisions that come out of the trial court. So, you know, it's a mix of factors potentially, but overall, the Texas story has been a positive one because it was the preeminent worst jurisdiction in years past, which has gone into at least, you know, better range.
Harold, I want to ask you this question. I'll play devil's advocate here for just a moment. What is good for business sometimes isn't good necessarily for consumers and average people. What do you say when people say, well, you know, what are you taking away from consumers when you have these tort reforms where you make it harder for people to sue businesses?
Yeah, well, I got a couple of responses to that, and we hear that a lot from our friends in the trial bar who basically want to preserve status quo. When it comes to liability systems, we are not saying that those systems should go away. If somebody's injured, they should absolutely be compensated. What this survey is looking at is the nature of frivolous and abusive litigation that lacks merit, which is driven by really a business model in and of itself that's designed to extract settlements from companies where there is no significant liability. And these are manufactured claims that we talk about. And that's become a real problem in places like Illinois or Louisiana or Florida, where I'm sitting here today. And so there's a differentiation, a clear one from our vantage point, in terms of legitimate versus non-legitimate litigation. And we're focused on the latter part and how that is having a significant stifling effect on innovation, on companies when it comes to how they view making business decisions like, you know, should we relocate? Should we invest even more in a state like Illinois? And I think these are legitimate issues that really ought to be considered and should be raised in that context.
All right, very good. Harold, we appreciate you being on with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Harold Kim, the COO of the U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform. You can find the latest report online at instituteforlegalreform.com. That's instituteforlegalreform.com. We'll also link out to it in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, in Europe, markets are in the green, but just barely this morning, up about 0.25% in London and in France.
in the U.S. futures are pointing toward a weak open later on Wall Street. NASDAQ, Dow, S&P futures all fractionally lower this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Corn futures dropped yesterday for the first time in four sessions, thanks to better-than-expected crop conditions and as crude oil prices, which fueled the prior session's rally, also retreated. Soybeans down yesterday despite the announcement of more sales to China, as forecasts for continued warm weather across much of the Midwest lessen concerns that the late developing crop could be damaged by frost. So at the end of the day yesterday, the December corn contract down 5.5 cents a bushel, November soybeans down 5.25 cents a bushel. Turning to livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange, lean hog futures tumbled yesterday with the most active contract dropping by the daily maximum due to weak cash prices and also technical selling. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Wednesday, September the 18th. August housing starts lead off the economic reports today. In the industry, analysts expecting some good news. They're forecasting starts for August coming in at an annual rate of just over 1.25 million. That's higher than the July rate of less than 1.2 housing starts, 1.2 million. The numbers today, the big headline numbers today will be the Federal Reserve and their interest rate decision. Federal Open Market Committee reveals its decision on interest rates at about 1 o'clock Chicago time. Fed watchers expect the central bank's policy-making arm to announce a quarter percentage cut at the announcement today. A news conference by the Federal Reserve Chairman follows the rate announcement at 1 o'clock Chicago time. And U.S. Energy Information Administration releases a report on crude inventories. That coming today as well, an important report on oil today. Food producer General Mills issues quarterly earnings this morning. Office furniture maker Herman Miller is out after the close today. Just some quarterly earnings from some big businesses today. Just a few things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, September the 18th.